So the subject of the talk is hybrid conformal field theories. And the goal of the talk is to explain what these are. So this was carried out with Marco Bertolini and Ronan Plesser. Marco is Ronan's student at Duke. And if you are interested, there's many more details in this preprint. So the focus of this work is on an old classical subject in string theory, which is two-dimensional superconformal field theories with 2-2 supersymmetry, constrained also by the choice of the central charges, which we have equal and equal to 9. And Shamit already mentioned that these 2-2 CFTs come with U1 symmetries, so left and right U1 symmetries that we can use to label all of our states. And in the theories of interest, the charges of all the states under these U1 symmetries will be integral. Right. So there are two sets of results that we obtain. One is what I would call an intrinsic definition of hybrids. And hopefully it'll become clear what I mean by intrinsic and extrinsic, if you like. And the other is an analysis of the massless space-time spectrum. Obtained when we use these CFTs to make a heterotic vacuum of string theory. And another way one can think about these is as the space of first order deformations that preserves 0-2 symmetry. So let me begin with a kind of general. This is cool. It's smarter this time. With some general remarks as to where this comes to. So first of all, why do we want to do this? Well, our motivation comes mainly from trying to understand properties of stringy geometry, which you can think of as properties of the moduli spaces of these CFTs, and of course mirror symmetry. And in this business, although it's, a classic subject in string theory, there are still many, many questions. And if we have a better handle on some of these issues, then I think we would be able to have many tools, many new tools for example, the kinds of questions that we saw come up in Shamit's talk, where we would like to, for example, look at a space of CFTs and find special points with special symmetry enhancements as one of the possibilities. So what kind of questions do I mean? Here's some basic ones just to illustrate the level of ignorance. So is there a finite number of families of such CFTs? Does every such CFD correspond to a Calabi Yau? Calabi Yau threefold, let's say. If we want to go away from the 2-2 world and consider 0-2 deformations, we can ask, what is the number of marginal 0-2 deformations? How do we characterize this in some effective way? More generally, we know that these 2-2 CFTs come with this beautiful 2-2 moduli space, this nice special Kähler manifold. It's, you know, whenever you start to use new technology of this kind, there are certain glitches, so we should just accept this. So we understand many properties of this 2-2 moduli space, but what's a bit more mysterious is how does it sit in a bigger moduli space that includes the 0-2 deformations? And in fact, we would like to know much more than we know now. What is the geometric structure here of this moduli space? So given that we do not have anything near of a complete classification, it becomes important to study different points in the moduli space.
Are there certain 0-2 models which do not contain the 0-2?
Yes.
Is there any reason you'd expect something more general as a geometric structure than just Kähler manifold?
Unreasonable hope,
okay.
That you know, that there's more refined structure to heterotic string than every conceivable, let's say the perturbative heterotic string than every conceivable n equals one. Right. I mean, I guess if one thinks about global properties, we at least know things like Kähler-Hodge, which is a little bit more, right? Right. And so, yeah, given that we do not have any kind of general big framework, it's very important to study limiting points in the moduli space of 2-2 CFTs and interrelations between them. So if we have, say, a family, and we can take different limits and analyze, we can learn something about the structure of the CFT. So, okay, there's no general classification, but how do we construct such things? This is cool. I'm just going to take it. Okay, thanks. Right. So there are many ways that people have learned to construct 2-2 theories. And one large class that we can do is by building solvable rational or irrational CFTs, such as taking orbifolds of T6 or, for example, Gepner models. We, of course, have another very famous way, which is to consider nonlinear sigma models, that is, the theories of maps from the string world sheet to a target Calabi Yau manifold. And in order to find these conditions of central charge 9, it better be a Calabi Yau threefold. And in this case, there's a very nice geometric picture. So, for example, we know that we can think of this moduli space as a product of complexified Kähler and complex structure deformations of the Calabi Yau with complex dimensions given by H11 and H12. And in fact, we also have a nice picture of at least the infinitesimal moduli space of 0-2 deformations, even when we restrict it to the 2-2 slice, and it splits as three components. So there are deformations associated to the complexified Kähler structure, complex structure deformations. And then what physicists called bundle deformations. So this is exactly the story that Chomet was mentioning, where in 0-2 context, we assign the data of a bundle and a manifold to the CFT. The 2-2 case is where the bundle happens to be the tangent bundle. But then if one considers 0-2 deformations away, then you get to deform the bundle away from the tangent bundle. And this characterizes the first order deformations. So those are two very nice ways. The way that I'm going to focus on today is a very general way that was developed in the early, well, I guess mid-90s, is not to start with a conformal theory, but instead start with a massive theory and use our G-flow from some relatively simple supersymmetric theory that's defined in the UV. And a very large class of such constructions is the set of gauge linear sigma models, which I'm sure have been mentioned before in the previous weeks of this workshop and will certainly be mentioned in the future, in this week. So these are two-dimensional gauge theories. And by setting up the basic ingredients of these, one can construct a very large class of 2-2 CFTs. So this was pioneered by Witten in 1993 and then developed in many directions. Now, for the most part, I will focus on a simpler class of theories that are contained in these GLSMs, which are known as Landau-Ginzburg orbifolds, LGO for short. As a side remark, these include the exact CFT Gepner models, and so we can actually have some nice checks on the Landau-Ginzburg story by comparing with exact computations. So let me say what these things are. It's really not happening anymore. So a Landau-Ginzburg orbifold, to build one, you start with a very simple nonlinear sigma model. And you add to it a new ingredient, which is a superpotential. So what that means is we have a target manifold, which is just complex space, Cn. And then we choose a holomorphic function polynomial, in fact, that is quasi-homogeneous. That is, there is a set of integers m sub I, one m for every one of these coordinates, such that the superpotential transforms homogeneously, quasi-homogeneously, with respect to multiplication by this weight to the right power. So then we have these integers m sub I and n are positive integers. And having such a nice story, we know that this theory RG flows to a superconformal field theory with, so first of all, the right central charges, if we choose our quasi-homogeneity conditions correctly. Then, also, very importantly, these chiral symmetries, this U1 left times U1 right, with the charges of these basic fields phi I given by exactly this M sub I over N, which for brevity I will denote Q sub I. And furthermore, there is a non-trivial CC ring of operators. So this is a set of chiral operators in the theory, which is simply, our basic coordinate ring modulo the ideal generated by first derivatives of our potential. And then a rather boring AC ring, which is just identity. And you should think that these CC ring elements, a subset of them gives you something like this CC component of the moduli space, so sort of the complex structure moduli space, while the AC would give you the deformations that are like the complexified Kähler in a geometric sense, in a geometric setting.
You call it non-linear, but...
True.
Okay.
But hopefully the perversion will become clear why I want to think of it this way. Okay, so this is great, but there's one little flaw. If you remember, I wanted all of my charges to be integral, and here clearly I have lots of rational charges. So this is not quite good enough to start making connection with geometry. So what I need to do is orbifold to project to integral QL and R. And there's a simple way to do it. I can orbifold by the Zn symmetry that hopefully is obvious. All right, so that's just the action generated by these guys. Right. And so that will give me nice string vacuum and a nice connection to geometry. Now, there's another important criterion that these theories have to satisfy, which one might call compactness. So our superconformal field theory defined this way is going to be non-singular. In other words, various correlators are going to be generically not infinity. If the critical point set of our superpotential just consists of the origin in Cn. So because it's quasi-homogeneous, if you have a point that's non-zero, then you actually have at least a line. And so you have a non-compact space with various pathologies associated to that. So that's very nice. What's even nicer is that we have, in this case of theories, a complete classification. This classification was worked out also in the 90s by Kreutzer and Skarke and Klemm and Schimmert. And the classification of these non-singular superpotentials goes like this. So for geometric reasons, it's interesting to consider central charges that are multiples of 3. And there's a rather trivial multiple, 0. So in this case, all of our fields have to have charge qi equal to 1/2. In that case, you see that the contribution of each of these fields or coordinates is 0 to the central charge. And so we can write down an infinite set of theories here, but it's, in a sense, kind of a boring set. The next interesting case to consider is CL equals to CR equals to 3. Here there are two possibilities. So we can have a superpotential that's quartic in two variables, or we can have a superpotential that's cubic in three variables. And what you should think of is that these are completely massive theories. So they lead to completely trivial dynamics in the infrared. These guys are not massive. In fact, they're nice and massless. And geometrically, they're like a T2 compactification. Then for C left and right being 6, there is a more interesting list. So there are 124 choices of W. So choices of the number of coordinates and this superpotential function. And this is like a K3 geometry. And finally, for central charge equals to 9, there is a more outrageous number of 10,839 choices. And this is really like a genuine Calabi-Yau threefold. Am I missing one in?
There's one which starts with 6. This
right. I think you're right. There's a third one. That's why it's good to have the classifier in the audience. Phi to the 6 and just phi to the 3 then, right? Yeah, because the other one is trivial. Yeah, thanks. Right. Good. So there's a second one. So there's a W2 and a W2 twiddle.
Why doesn't it start with 2?
Because if... sorry?
Isn't that why it starts with 2, the number? I don't know. W's.
Because you can't have W1. Yeah, because... Okay, so why did I drag you through this wonderful but ancient history? Well, the reason is that given that these things exist, it's pretty easy to understand why what I will call hybrids is inevitable. Ability. So recall that one of the wonderful things that came out of studies of these kinds of theories defined by RG flow was the notion of Calabi-Yau, Landau, Ginzburg correspondence. Basically, the point is that take some Calabi-Yau compactification and move around in the complexified Kähler moduli space. There will be points in that moduli space where the theory will actually be identical to a Landau-Ginzburg orbifold theory. And one very nice example of this is if we take an elliptic curve defined, say, by the vanishing of a cubic inside CP2. Then we basically get two kinds of pieces of data to label the CFT. One is a complex structure parameter, which you can think of as a coefficient of this superpotential of some monomial. And the other is a complexified Kähler deformation. So if we draw the complexified Kähler moduli space here, it's a single parameter moduli space, which you can think of as the size of the CP2 complexified by a B field. And so there's a size R and a B field angular coordinate. And then in one limit, you obtain a very large smooth torus, while in another limit, if you move in the moduli space, you find this Landau-Ginzburg orbifold given exactly by this superpotential modulo the obvious Z3 quotient. So now, these days, we know that it's very popular to think about elliptically fibered and K3 fibered Calabi-Yaus. And that is where the a very nice way of seeing hybrids is hiding. So suppose we have a superconformal field theory for some elliptic or K3 fibered Calabi-Yau threefold M. Right, so we think of this thing as some base manifold with a torus fiber, one, two, that varies holomorphically over the base. Maybe at some point we have a singularity in the fibration data where one of the cycles of the torus shrinks, right? And now suppose that in the moduli space of this, we have a parameter that allows us to take this fiber very, very, very small, right? In other words, we're going to a place in the moduli space associated to the torus that's like this Landau-Ginzburg orbifold point. So if we have this kind of small fiber parameter where we can take a limit, then we expect that we should be able to describe the theory as the same base manifold, but now with the fibers given by a Landau-Ginzburg orbifold with a superpotential. So instead of varying the complex structure of the torus over the base, what we're doing is varying the complex structure of the superpotential over the base. And this is a very nice concrete way that you can think about a hybrid CFT. What it is a construction in the UV of a theory where you have a base geometry B with a fiber that's a Landau-Ginzburg fiber. I'm saying this is not in the moduli space? No, in this case it is. In this case it is. In fact, one of the questions that I think is really neat and a little bit hard to answer is, I'm going to define hybrids now a little bit more abstractly, and then it's a question, well, given a hybrid, is there an embedding where you produce something like this or not? And the answer to me, at least, is not clear. By thinking about these moduli spaces in the 90s that hybrids were first discovered by Witten and by Aspinwall, Green, and Morrison. They have been around and sort of available to the cognoscenti, but maybe not really studied in depth. And so our purpose was to really bring hybrids into the world to give them an existence of their own, independent of particular embeddings in various constructions. So let me move on now. To describe these intrinsic 2-2 hybrids. So the start, just like in the Landau-Ginzburg case, is a nonlinear sigma model. And this answering to Takuya's criticism, it is actually a nonlinear sigma model. And it's then, of course, specified, since I'm living in the 2-2 world, by a Taylor target space, Y0 with some Kähler metric G. But now, equipped with a superpotential, so some holomorphic function on Y0, so better be that if I want a non-trivial superpotential, Y0 better be non-compact, right? And what the superpotential does is that if I think very heuristically about the path integral of this theory, then the action, which weights the different field configurations, contains a term which is given by measuring the deviation away from critical points of the superpotential. So in the low energy limit, where we want to consider just very small fluctuations, this term will mean that field configurations are really restricted to be near the critical point of the superpotential. And this leads to the first kind of nice property that we want a good hybrid to have. So we define what we call the potential condition. So this is a condition on this Y0 and the superpotential. So now we want the critical points of W to be a manifold B, which is smooth and very importantly compact. With complex dimension little d. And once we have this, since we know we're going to be interested just in fluctuations near this base geometry, we can model the infrared physics, which is where the CFT lives, by a simpler geometry, where we just take the space to be a total space of some holomorphic vector bundle over our base. And if we take the coordinates on this total space and split them into a base and fiber directions, then our superpotential will take a very nice form. So it'll be a sum over the point in some lattice polytope. With monomials in the fiber directions, those are the sort of Landau-Ginzburg directions, and coefficients that are now no longer constant, but depend holomorphically on where we are on the base. And in order for this setup to be well defined, we need for this to be a section of OY, which then, of course, will constrain what these coefficients are. And the simplest case, so I think our machinery applies to arbitrary vector bundles X, but the place where you don't go mad applying it is when X is really a sum of line bundles. So you can think of all of the different Landau-Ginzburg fibers as being coordinates on individual line bundles. Okay, so that's some basic data of a good hybrid. The other thing that we need is we need the good hybrid to have the symmetries that allow us to extract infrared data from this UV description. So what are the symmetries of a good hybrid? Right. So first and foremost, we need to have these U on left times U on right symmetries. And in order to have them, what we show is that, first of all, in order for certain anomalies to vanish, the total space Y has to have trivial first turn class, which of course you can also think of as a relation between the turn classes of the Landau-Ginzburg bundle and the base geometry. And we, in fact, just work with a Calabi-Yau, non-compact Calabi-Yau Y. And the other thing we need is we need the superpotential to respect these symmetries. And that requires that there exists, we often assume, a unique killing vector . So a holomorphic killing vector that preserves, under the Lie derivative, our superpotential function. And if we have this data, then we have a hybrid. So some non-trivial Landau-Ginzburg theory fibered over a base. Now, there's an important subtlety that, again, I think highlights a certain amount of ignorance that we still have about these supposedly classic 2-2 theories. And that is what we call good versus pseudo hybrids. So some hybrids are better than others. So for a good hybrid, or a hybrid is good, maybe is a better way to say it, if and only if this killing vector is actually a vertical vector field. In other words, it only acts on the fiber directions, and then it's not hard to convince yourself that it really takes the form of a rescaling of these fiber directions with some charges Q. So these are going to be then the charges associated to the Landau-Ginzburg fiber. And in this case, when V is vertical, we really expect this kind of picture of a fibered Landau-Ginzburg over a base to be a good description of the CFT. And in fact, we can then compute the central charge and find that it includes contributions from the base geometry, just this kind of trivial factor of 3D, and then the Landau-Ginzburg contribution. If, on the other hand, if V is not vertical, then we have a little problem that our U1 left times U1 right action is base dependent. And this is actually really a mysterious case, because at least simple example of this suggests that it is perhaps a singular CFT. So this was studied, again, in some just examples, not in full generality, by Aspinwall and Plesser in 09. And by singular, I really mean something a little bit peculiar, that you think you're going to a kind of generic point in the moduli space, and yet, at finite distance, you find a singularity. In other words, the correlators and the curvature on the moduli space blows up as you take this hybrid limit.
So are there non-compact branches in the GLSM of the would-be hybrid?
No.
How do you get a singularity without a non-compact branch?
That's a really great question. So what Shamet says is that the standard lore is that when you have this kind of GLSM embedding for a theory, the only way that singularities that we know develop is that you go to some place where there is a direction in field space that opens up that's non-compact, and you get singularities from this diverging measure of this non-compact direction. And that's what I would have said before I met a pseudo-hybrid. But in the pseudo-hybrid, you really have a picture. Sorry, this will probably only make sense for GLSM people. But you know, so you have, let's say, some geometric phase, and then you have some pseudo-hybrid phase, where using standard mirror symmetry tricks, Paul and Ronan compute the metric on the whole moduli space, right? And they see that the point corresponding to going deep in the phase, out away from any kind of funny non-compact directions, is a finite distance singularity. It's something that I really did not appreciate before their story. But in examples, yeah.
What's the nature of the singularity here?
That I don't know. So they have an explicit description, but it's you really have a curvature singularity in the moduli space. So it's in a sense like a conifold. Yeah. So as you might guess, then we stay away from the pseudo hybrids and talk about the good hybrids. So of course, another very important symmetry that we want our theory to have, well, that our theory by construction has, is this 2-2 symmetry. So there are four charges, Q left and Q right, and they're complex conjugates. And a crucial point for studying the properties of these theories is that up to the equations of motion, we can decompose, say, the Q bar right charge as a sum of two anti-commuting terms. So there's a Q bar 0 plus a Q bar W. And Q bar 0 here is exactly what you would have as the charge of the nonlinear sigma model with target space Y and the superpotential being 0. And then we have a contribution from the superpotential. And target space here is just trivial, and so the action of this Q bar 0 is very simple. A key ingredient in probing the low energy physics of this hybrid theory is due to an observation of Witten that was then expanded on by Silverstein and Newton and generalized to 0-2 convex as well by Disler and Kotcher, is that if we study the cohomology of this Q-bar operator, we find a representation of an n equals 2 supervirator algebra, so this sort of left-moving superconformal algebra, with a curved BC beta gamma realization. And this is a little bit of a technical point, but I want to emphasize it. This is one of the things that we really develop in our work, is working with this kind of curved BC beta gamma appropriate to
through this hybrid story. And it's an incredibly handy presentation that I think will probably be quite useful in more general contexts. In particular, for example, it's also very easy to apply this to just a standard 0-2 nonlinear sigma model, where it offers some insights into, say, the space of deformations of 0-2 and LSMs that are hard to come by in any other kind of direct approach where you're just working with the NLSM. So that's a kind of fun technical toy for those who are interested. Okay. So coming to the last part of my talk, where I want to tell you what we can do with these hybrids beyond defining them. Before I talk about some hopes for the future. So first of all, if we want to talk about these hybrids as CFTs appropriate for string vacua and appropriate for making connections to geometries, just like in the Landau-Ginzburg case, we have to orbital by the same sort of Zn symmetry as in Landau-Ginzburg. And so really, we're studying hybrid orbital theories. And that's rather important. First of all, because without them, we don't have a string vacuum. And therefore, it would be very hard to find a connection, say, with things that geometers might be interested in. And the second point is that it actually increases the playground a little bit, that we don't need to just consider this total space Y, remember I had as the total space of some vector bundle over B, but because we're doing this orbifold, we can actually consider more general topologies of orbibundles. In other words, we can have allow ourselves the luxury of taking, say, fractional bundles over, say, P3. Basically, yes, the transition functions for these are not well defined, but because there is an extra Z2 acting on the fiber directions, we can have well defined spaces of this sort. Okay, so we can do this. Do this orbital. And now to have the description in terms of this nonlinear sigma model be useful, we need to take what's known as the hybrid limit. This is the analog of a large radius limit or a Landau-Ginzburg orbifold limit, where you're going to the point in the moduli space where the hybrid description is good. And in this case, it's very simple to say what it is. It says, please take the volume of the base to be very large. And if we do this, then we have a nice machine for studying a simple but crucial question, which is, what is the space of marginal deformations of these kinds of hybrid limits? And in particular, let's look at first order marginal deformations. So as I mentioned before, for the Calabi-Yau case, and maybe I should make it clear, ones that preserve 0-2 supersymmetry. So in the case of Calabi-Yau large radius limit, we at least have a good way of counting these. adding up the Hodge numbers, and this non-topological dimension of the first cohomology group value in T tensor P star. And these, of course, describe for us the nice 2-2 moduli space, and are, of course, integrable deformations, and don't receive any quantum corrections. In other words, what we compute in the large radius limit for the number of these, at least, remains true even at finite radius. These, on the other hand, are not topological. And they depend on complex structure of our manifold M. That's pretty obvious because I'm using a particular representation of this homomorphic bundle, maybe. And there can be quantum obstructions. So what this means is essentially a catchword for world gene instantons. So the same world gene instantons responsible for giving us nice Rosa-Witten invariants and so on can remove some of these deformations that we see classically. So that's a story that's that we can say about the Calabi-Yau and the large radius limit. Then there is a very nice story in the Landau-Ginsburg-Orbifold limit that was developed by Kotzer and Witten. Also, I think in 93, where you, by computing a certain subset of this Q-bar homology, and using this n equals 2 Virasoro algebra hidden inside the Q-bar cohomology, one can really obtain exact spectrum. In other words, we can obtain the number of these 0-2 deformations, for example, without correction. That is what it is. Right. And in a sense, this winds up as a study of a flat BC beta gamma system that realizes this n equals 2 Virasoro in the Q-bar cohomology. And in a hybrid world, we have a kind of generalization and combination of these two ingredients, that we have a spectral sequence for this sum of operators. Where basically, if we evaluate the Q-bar zero cohomology, so remember, this is a sort of count of massless states for the non-compact sigma model on Y. And so this gives you some big infinite dimensional space in general. But then when you include the corrections from this Q bar W, it cuts you down to a nice finite dimensional space, and you can really count the number of deformations. So let me indicate some of the features of this. So first of all, you might ask, what kind of corrections does your computation miss? So our results are exact up to world sheet instantons. In this base space B. This in particular makes this a kind of cute laboratory for studying world sheet instanton corrections. So I told you here that world cheat instantons can lift some of those classical deformations, right? But actually, it's never been shown in a concrete example of how does this actually happen. And the reason is that you have to do sums over world cheat instantons in a complicated Calabi-Yau, which can be quite tricky. On the other hand, if your base space is P1, then you really might have a good chance of writing these corrections quite explicitly. And I think that would be a very interesting thing to do. A kind of technical remark is that since we're doing this hybrid orbifold, we really have to sum over different twisted sectors and different geometries constructed from this Y play a role in the different twisted sectors. And it's a kind of interesting hierarchical structure of various bundles over B. We can see a dependence on the complex structure of W and B intermingling. And when we study this in different specific examples, as is common in studies of 0-2 deformations, we again see suggestions of new non-renormalization theorems. So let me say words what I mean there. So we have a moduli space of 2-2 theories. And we have different limits where we can do computations. Hybrid, Meinberg-Ginzburg, large radius. Then we have this basic fact that large radius deformations can be lifted by quantum corrections. And so one simple diagnostic is, well, if they were lifted, then we should see that there is a sort of decrease of deformations when we computed in other limits. It's not a precise statement, right? Evil, weird things might happen where the deformations are high here and high here, but low in the middle. But assuming such things don't happen, we can compare the numbers. And the general lore so far in this kind of set of GLSM models is that the set of deformations that are protected is actually bigger than any known non-renormalization theorem. So we don't quite have the full understanding of what would be a sort of all-encompassing non-renormalization theorem that would really explain all of these miraculous cancellations between different world-cheat instantons. Okay, so let me end with a brief look at some prospects of this story. Slogan is that there is a large class of interesting geometric structures to explore. And the exploration can be done profitably, I think, divided into two categories. First, one can stick to the 2-2 world and, for example, try to develop topological field theory techniques based on these hybrid geometries. And in particular, apply localization to, say, evaluate B model correlators. And I think that's eminently doable. A more challenging problem to shoot for would be some sort of classification result. Where we can try to answer something along the lines of Albert's question, is every hybrid coming from a some K3 hybrid or Elliptic 2 hybrid geometry? And here you can kind of nicely divide the problem by the dimension of the base. So what do we know? If the base has dimension 0, so it's a point, then we're in the land of Ginzburg-Orbifold land. Very nice. Last step. If we are dimension 1, then we have a P1, and morally we should have a K3 fiber geometry corresponding to this hybrid. And similarly, in dimension 2 base, we expect to compare to T2 fiber geometries. And there's a third case, which is kind of fun, where the base has dimension 3. So if the dimension of the base is 3, then at first sight, the Landau-Ginzburg theory is very boring because it's just a set of massive fields. But what makes it fun is that even though it's massive, so if I write again the fields in this base fiber decomposition where the base coordinates are u and the phi's of the fiber coordinates, so we have this n by n matrix, but which now depends holomorphically on u, right? And so there are points in the base where the Landau-Ginzburg theory would become singular, that there would be massless directions. And so what this corresponds to is various, or I should say an associated geometry to these is branched covers of, say, various Fano threefolds that are in some sense singular Palladias. And these hybrids with these massive fields is a very nice sort of physical way to desingularize this and make sense of this branch cover in a quantitative CFT way. I think classifying these would also be interesting. These kinds of branch double covers have shown up recently in various studies of generalizations of GLSMs to non-abelian gauge groups and so on. And maybe this offers some insight. The second point, and this will be the last bit. Let's get rid of the bundles for it. The second set of thoughts that one should have about hybrids are ones associated to 0,2. So this is much more mysterious, I would say. It's quite possible that here we will really find 0,2 CFTs that maybe do not have any obvious geometric interpretation. There will be an interesting interplay between heterotic anomalies on the world in the world sheet theory associated to base and fiber. And there's really a lot of open ground here. So we can consider, for example, non-Kähler base manifold B and take a fiber as a 0,2 Landau-Ginzburg. And then I think studying these and the seeing carefully when we expect this to define a CFT should be really, really interesting. A prerequisite, one might think, to any kind of classification of these guys is to actually give a classification of 0,2 Landau-Ginzburgs, which is something that has not been worked out in one of the little combinatorial exercises that we're currently pursuing. And actually, I am hopeful that from studies of these 0-2 Landau Ginsbergs and maybe these also generalized hybrids, we might be able to provide a list of 0-2 theories with particularly nice symmetries, which might be of interest to some people. So I think I will end there. That's the hybrid world.
For your combinatorial study classifying 0-2 LG theories, how easy is it to actually check that when you get some data that looks like it might define a theory, you can actually make a non-singular choice of bundle data? That didn't seem to me there was an obvious way to do that.
It's not so easy, yeah. So the in the 2-2 case, actually at first hand when you come to it, it's also not so obvious, right? So the conditions for these non-singular superpotentials, one really has to think about it carefully, which is what these guys did. And I'm hopeful that sort of at that level of analysis that I really do have an ideal of these potential functions that's zero dimensional. At least that's something that we will be able to combinatorially constrain. There's also a very neat question just in 0-2 Landau Ginsbergs, right? So you and Jacques had a list of sort of additional criteria, right? When a 0-2 Landau Ginsberg very nicely maps to a geometry with a bundle data, is every non-singular 0-2 Landau Ginsberg of that form? Not sure. There's also interesting questions related to this kind of non-singularity of examining the elliptic genus of 0-2 Landau Ginsberg, for which there is a beautiful combinatorial formula, but looking at it, it is not at all obvious, first of all, that it is a nice object when you have a non-singular 0-2 potential. And second, there's this kind of observation that you can make that in any case that your imagination allows, you compute these 0-2 Landau Ginsbergs, you compute the 0-2 elliptic genus, and of course it matches the form of some K3 with Bondo, the elliptic genus. It's not only a polynomial, but you can guess at least roughly what is the structure of the Bondo. Is that always going to be the case? So there's lots of open combinatorics there. But I think there is some hope, just because their work, it was also not obvious.
I mean, in the case of when the base is P1, I mean, do I learn something new about other 4.4 compact equations? I mean, like on K3.
Right. That's also a fun question. So we ran through basically applying your algorithm to the C equals 6 Landau Ginsberg fibers. You mean for elliptically fibered K3?
No. If the base, I mean, you said basically you have a Landau Ginsberg fibers.
Yeah.
So is there something new about the K3 compact? In the sense that there is there some new theory that that would make sense in 6 dimensions?
So far, we have found no evidence of anything that's not
part of the same. So this is all in the modulized space of the K3 and in the matter of polarization?
Yes. But on the other hand, maybe it does give you a nice way to realize some particularly symmetric point.
Maybe we have a second question. I mean, there are these models which also sort of non-geometric because they were the mirror of the rigid Calabi-Yau.
Right.
And you have, so to say, a higher dimensional space, and then the Hodge diamond is, so to say, sits tiny in that.
Right.
Is this also a hybrid? Would you say it's a hybrid? What is it? It's not geometric.
I would say that I'm not sure I would call it a hybrid because there's really no. There's no way to make even part of the geometry large, right? You don't have any H11.
But it has, so to say, this point of maximum one.
Right, so from a mirror point of view, it's of course, and from a CFT point of view, it's a perfectly nice model.
But basically, this means to introduce fermions, right? Additional. I mean, this is this Grassmann construction. Can you also hybrid this?
Right, okay, yeah. In a sense, I would say that the fermion construction is a kind of hybrid as well, right? So that's a construction where you work with supermanifolds as a way of realizing mirrors of certain rigid Calabi-Yaus. And in that case, you also have sort of funny statistics fibers twisted over space. I would say it has the similar flavor, but I'm not sure I want to use the same term just because this guy has certain connotations that have been around.
Any other questions? Well, let's think about it.
Thank you.